I'm Greg Johnson.
And I'm John Morgan.
And I'm Frody.
Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. We are back together doing our normal roundtable podcasts. And as we always do, I'd like to begin by thanking our donors. It's been a few weeks since we've had a chance to do this. We are trying to raise $100,000 this year, and we have raised $44,676.92 so far, which is great. We're well on the way. We are more than 44% of the way there. So I want to thank RS for $200, RW for $100, TP for $20 a month. And I should say that we have again been deplatformed, and that has again wiped out our monthly donations. We do have a stopgap in place, but we can only take one-off donations from people in the United States. So if you signed up for a monthly donation, I apologize, but it has been wiped out again. If you want to do it, just do it manually. Do it a one-off thing. Set a little Google alert for yourself or something once a month. And we are trying to get some kind of alternative in place. We're working on that full-time to find some other alternative, but it's not easy. So again, we have been deplatformed from another payment processor. We have a stopgap in place that allows us to take one-off donations and purchases in the United States only. So I will read the people who gave $20 a month, even though it's not going to be automatically drawn or any kind of monthly donation. DD gave 10 a month. JA, 150. SW, 50 a month. WM, 3 a month. CK, 200. WB, 100 a month. That's very generous. EV, $10 a month. JS, 16 a month. SM, 50. OH, 10 a month. CR, 5. AK, 5 a month. KC, 100. SL, 500. Very, very generous. Thank you. ED, 500. Also very generous. MD gave $200. Again, thank you so much. RS 50, JG 50, RS 50 again. Maybe it's the same RS, I don't know. MH gave 100, EK 100. We also received a donation of $7,039. That's an interesting odd number, but thank you very much, whoever out there gave us that amount. SJ gave $200, BN 30, TR 15, TQ 30, BJ 15, TD 100, TP 500. Wow, again, amazing. An anonymous 500, HA gave 5, DL 50, JW 10, JB 500. A friend of ours who's extraordinarily generous gave $10,180. JS gave 16, MB 100, DD 100, AB 10, WD 100, DP 100, TS 50, SM 100, PS 100, JC 35, RW 75. Also, a friend of mine, Carl, gave $1,168, and we finally got an anonymous crypto donation of $56 and change. So thank you, everybody. This is extraordinarily generous. It gets us a lot further down the road to that annual goal of $100,000.
I always say that small donations also count, and people have different means, and some people can give a lot of money, but you know, small donations add up, so everything counts. So I don't think that you should be sort of discouraged. And it's also important that people are not discouraged by deplatforming, because since we are marginalized by the establishment, we are marginalized as a political movement. White nationalists are different organizations and different projects will be deplatformed from time to time. And that is only to be expected, and we just have to be mentally prepared for it and just, you know, keep going over those little obstacles every time they appear, even if they don't seem to be so very small obstacles. But still, I mean, that's just what you have to expect. So I don't think people should be too discouraged by the fact that we as white nationalists get deplatformed from Twitter, from PayPal, from credit card processors, from all kinds of things, because that's the name of the game now.
Yeah, I would be upset if they weren't trying to deplatform us, honestly. It's almost an endorsement of our work and effectiveness that these people are getting really, really worried and they just want to shut us down. They know that the longer we stay online and the longer we can reach people and the broader our reach, the sooner comes the day when we've gotten to the tipping point and enough people believe as we do that we're going to have real political change.
Yeah, and I also appreciate that there's so many people, you know, giving such large donations. I mean, of course, we appreciate everybody who gives us money, but we don't know these days from day to day when we start work what we're going to find out. It's a very uncertain time for us. So the more we can get together now, that means we can build up reserves so that, you know, if the deplatforming gets even more extreme than it has been already, and eventually, we hope this never happens, but it's possible we could get to the point where there simply isn't any way to receive funds, at least, you know, electronically and so forth. You know, it'd be good if we have a reserve that we can rely on, so there'll be no interruption in what we're doing.
Yeah. Winter is coming for white advocacy, I like to say. Although everyone seems to have forgotten all about what's it called, that series that everyone was watching, and it's had zero afterlife now. Game of Thrones. Winter is coming.
Well, I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago where I think I mentioned the fact that the political establishment, our political opponents, the left in a very general, generic sense of the word, has basically already admitted to themselves that they have nothing to bring to the table in a real debate against us.
Mm-hmm.
And so their only option is always to try to shut us down, because they can't really take us on a debate. We would humiliate them every single time. We have the facts, we have the logic, we have morality on our side. So the only thing they can do is to try to shut us down and try to silence us by shutting our YouTube channels down, shutting us down from Twitter, from money processing, from, you know, everything, basically.
Exactly.
That's their only option. And I think that's sort of an implicit acknowledgement of, you know, our superiority in a way.
Oh, yeah, exactly. These people know that in any honest debate, we win.
Yeah.
So they just don't want to have an honest debate. And I get that. They're fragile people. They're brittle people. They don't want to be challenged. They want to be left with their illusions. They want to be able to run things and have their way forever. And we're challenging that. And eventually their reign is going to come to an end, though, one way or the other, because it's premised on falsehoods and it can only lead to disaster. So I'd like to segue into talking about the recent shooting disasters in America and also the ridiculous response from both the left and the mainstream right, including President Trump, unfortunately. So last Saturday, a fellow named Patrick Crucius, 25 years old, or is he 21?
No, he's still, yeah, 21.
21 years
old. He's
still
an undergraduate.
Yeah, 21 years old, walked into a Walmart store in El Paso, Texas, and started shooting with an automatic weapon, an AK-47. And he killed, I think it's now 22 people and wounded 24 others. He lived in another part of Texas, and he drove to El Paso because it's right on the border. It's the front lines of the Mexican and Central American and now really global invasion. They're all coming through that border. People from Africa and Asia are coming through that border as well. It's the front lines for the third world invasion of America. And he went there. El Paso itself is about 10% white. It's basically indistinguishable from Mexico. which is maybe 10% white as well. Mm-hmm. Demographically, it's about the same as Mexico now. So Mexico is creeping over the border and Mexicanizing America. He went there, I guess, to protest this. It's not exactly clear how he thought shooting Walmart shoppers was going to help change the invasion of America. But
well, in his manifesto, he just suggests that this will scare people. They'll hear about it and they won't want to come, which, of course, is ridiculous because there have been shootings like this before. And it just exacerbates the situation. It doesn't because immediately all the powers that be come to the defense of the victims and the right. people who are like them. So, yeah, it's I suppose some people might think it was some kind of accelerationist thing. But if so, he doesn't write about that in his manifesto.
No, he does, however, endorse Brenton Tarrant's manifesto, which he mentions, and that really is an accelerationist document. Mm. So I think that he believed that this was somehow an accelerationist thing. The only trouble is that it accelerates the establishment's desire to open the borders. Basically, the reaction from the left is to basically throw America's coat over the Rio Grande and invite them to step on it as they come flooding yes. in. So that kind of gallantry only, it does accelerate it. It accelerates white dispossession. I don't know if it's going to create any kind of politically effective backlash, however. So far, the entire backlash has been against us.
Yes.
And I think that, We might stay on this topic, but I think one thing that people always understand that resonates with people is double standards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting to bring attention to the fact that during the same day were two shootings, mm-hmm. but only one of them is given this sort of political angle by the establishment.
Despite yeah. the fact that there's considerable evidence that the Dayton shooter was some kind of crazy radical leftist.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't read as much about him because there doesn't seem to be as much known about him. But didn't they analyze his social media and find that he was...
Right.
He was an Antifa supporter and actually attended Antifa-type events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
The point is that even before the smoke is cleared away... the mass media will try to angle everything that happens in a sort of anti-white way, in a way that sort of puts blame on nationalism, on white people, on white nationalism, on Donald Trump, whatever, right. you know, always try to put a political angle on it.
Well,
when that's not possible anymore, then politics isn't relevant anymore, you know. Then it's just this crazy guy or this whatever. They find some other way to explain it. But whenever it is a nationalist, then they maximize the sort of political context of it and they go out of their way to sort of put the blame on all white nationalists.
Exactly.
Even though we always make it very clear that we resent this kind of behavior. We resent it. It's evil. It's harmful to our cause, mm-hmm. and it's harmful to everything we stand for. But still, they always try to put that. And that double standard, I think, is very important for us to emphasize as well.
It's extremely instructive. Nobody, apparently, the Dayton shooter, his name is Connor Betts, I believe. The Dayton shooter was a supporter of Elizabeth Warren.
I hadn't heard that.
The Dayton shooter... repeated the kinds of this is like the Holocaust rhetoric about detaining people on the southern border that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has used, which also wound up this suicide attacker in Washington State mm-hmm. who went and attacked the ICE thing and was gunned down, so I'm wondering when the national media are going to demand that Elizabeth Warren come forward and denounce these people, who follow her or the Antifa and so forth.
Yeah, where
and
are distance all the herself. Tweets? Yeah, where are all the these big tweets about putting the blame on Elizabeth Warren or Cortez or whoever, like they do with Trump? whenever someone who notices the same problems that Trump notices, namely the problems at the Mexican border, whenever anyone else notices those problems, then Trump is to blame. But they never make that connection when it goes the other way.
Well, the shooter actually, the El Paso shooter, in his manifesto, he actually explicitly denies that Trump had anything to do with it and said that he'd already had those views for years before Trump came along, which that is what the media and also the leftist establishment in the U.S. is always trying to do. Is like all of us here, we were all active way before Trump ever came along. Yeah. And it's so funny to me that they try to reduce it to him, that like under Obama, we'd achieved this post-racial utopia. And Trump came along and all of a sudden there were, you know, these white nationalists and all these people everywhere, you know, trying to ruin everything.
Yeah.
I mean, this didn't start with Trump. It won't end with Trump. But they want to use it as fodder for, you know, their own particular political crusades. But I think more broadly, when you look at these incidents, really what you can take away from it is that people who want to go insane and kill a bunch of people at random will find any excuse to do it. They could be excuses from the left, from the right, from things within their own minds, yeah. and their psychotic fantasies.
Yeah.
These aren't ultimately political acts.
No.
I mean, a genuine act of terrorism is somebody who is trained ideologically and otherwise by a particular group, and they order him to carry out an attack in pursuit of some goal. A lone wolf is never a terrorist in that sense, because they're not acting in pursuit of any larger goal outside of their own minds. And that's why their actions don't have any larger consequences beyond, you know, in pursuit of the goals that they think that they're pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wanted to mention there was this third shooting a week before at this garlic festival in California. And the media tried to push that as a white nationalist thing, even though the connection was pretty tenuous.
Yeah.
But just before the attack, he tweeted, or somewhere, I don't remember which social media platform it was, but he recommended that people read Might is Right by Ragnar Redbeard, which is kind of funny because I know, at least for Frody and I, that was a book that we both read when we first got interested in this stuff. And it's kind of a fun book, but I wouldn't say it's any kind of
it's
inspiration or a guidebook or anything like that. It's
no, it's a subcultural cult book. It's not a white nationalist book. I think the author was more like an anarchist in his day in the 1800s.
A lot of people think he was like a follower of Stirner, is what I've always
thought. Yeah, yeah. And you know, people like, you know, Church of Satan people. It's a subcultural cult book.
Yeah, yeah.
It isn't a white nationalist book at all.
Yeah, he might have gotten into that through the Church of Satan. Didn't Anton LaVey actually just plagiarize huge chunks?
Yeah, there's parts of the Satanic Bible that are taken out.
And he wrote a foreword to one of the editions, I think, mm-hmm. one of the
right
editions around that time.
Yeah, well, it's very true that there are a lot of routes that people come to be shooters. One thing I think they all have in common is they feel hopeless mm-hmm. about the future. The psychology of these mass shooters is very similar to the psychology of suicide bombers in the Middle East or suicide attackers outside the Middle East. Muslims are everywhere now carrying this stuff out. They feel hopeless. Very significant numbers of them feel hopeless, like their lives don't have any meaning, that they don't have any potentials to have a family or a normal life or anything like that. And they think that this is an honorable way of basically ending their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so they do this. And I think that as America becomes a more chaotic, alienated place, that there's just going to be more of this. And it's going to come from the left and the right.
Yes.
It's going to come basically from people who are more sensitive. Sensitive to their surroundings, and people who are sensitive to their surroundings are also likely to entertain edgy political ideas too, whether they're extreme left or extreme right ideas. So I do think that that's a phenomenon. I also think that this Crucius character and this fellow in the Gilroy Garlic Festival, you just look at their faces and it's like, God, they look like they came out of the same mold. They look like Spurgs. And there really is a rise in autism and Asperger's for some reason.
I think many of them are autists.
Yeah.
Many of them are autists and many of them have other mental problems and so on.
Yeah.
So, there are many mental problems because a normally functioning person doesn't do a thing like that.
Right.
And the same thing with, you know, with Breivik or, I mean, I don't care there were, I think, at least two psychological evaluations of him to see if he was, you know, capable of standing, capable of taking responsibility for his own actions. And those two investigations came out disagreeing. So that one found him, you know, capable of being what would the English term be for a person who is
liable
for his actions? Yeah, and the other said that he was not. But I mean, if you look at what he did, there's no way you can think that would be conducive to you know, causing any positive political debate in the country or whatever. I mean, it's obviously he's crazy in some capacity, at least.
Fact that he also believed that there was this huge Knights Templar organization.
Yeah, I mean, there are many
behind him. I kind of thought that he was trying to meme that into existence, honestly. But yeah, a lot of these people have psychological problems. A lot of them are people who feel hopeless.
Yeah.
And if there's going to be a political solution to these sorts of events, we're going to have to deal with the underlying causes of hopelessness. And I believe that one of the main reasons why white Americans feel hopeless is demographic decline.
Yes, of course.
That basically deprives us of a sense of having a collective future. And a collective future imparts life with meaning. And when you lack that, you tend to engage in short-term, self-indulgent activity. And that's just bad. That explains these kinds of shooters, but it also explains far more pervasive problems like failure to leave home, failure to go to college or to finish high school or to form relationships or to have families, or the propensity to get on drugs or to become a drunkard or to commit suicide. Because you can't be happy with this kind of life, and so you start medicating yourself, either with prescription or non-prescription medications. And then, of course, a lot of people commit suicide. And one way that people commit suicide is suicide by cop.
Yeah.
So I do think that there is an underlying social cause of this, and there are political solutions. But the political solutions that are being entertained for this, of course, are Band-Aid solutions. Because, of course, to have a real solution, the people in power would have to take responsibility for the system they've created. So instead, they always try and blame it on something that's marginal or outside the system. So they blame it on people like us.
Yes.
We're not the cause of Americans feeling alienated and hopeless. They're the cause of that.
Yes.
We're just the ones who are objecting to it. We're the bearers of bad news.
They're trying to shoot the messenger.
Yeah. They're trying to shoot the messenger, yeah. And it's not going to work. It's not going to work because if you don't deal with the underlying problem, if you don't deal with the underlying cause, the same effect is going to happen over and over again. And the only thing that these people are going to do is take the battery out of the smoke alarm. Basically, they're going to make it more and more difficult for dissenting voices and warning voices to be heard. That's not smart, but we don't have a smart establishment. We have a brittle, narcissistic establishment that's trying to basically hold on to power by shutting out dissent.
Yes.
And I think what makes matters even worse is that, yes, you have a situation where people become more and more alienated from the country they live in because they are increasingly becoming ethnic minorities in their own countries.
Yeah.
And at the same time, their worries and concerns are not validated. So when they voice some concern about what's happening in their own communities, those concerns are just dismissed as quote unquote hate, and they are portrayed as evil or whatever for protesting. And when you create that social atmosphere, you don't create room for any constructive debate about the fundamental issues at all. And right. And that further exacerbates the desperation, in these people, that these people feel, and which pushes them to do stupid things, because some people are mentally unstable. And yeah, I believe that that's probably a very significant factor.
Yeah, there's a gigantic disconnect between the truth about the Great Replacement, the truth about looming automation, transformation of the economy, and how that's going to clash with having all these low-skilled Mexicans here and so forth.
Oh, could I just interject? It's funny that they tried to blame Trump for the shooter in El Paso, because actually some of his... The first part of his manifesto talks about the Great Replacement, but he also goes off on capitalism.
He goes off capitalism.
And he sounds a lot like Andrew Yang.
Yeah.
So they might as well blame Yang for the shooting as well.
Well, if they were interested in justice, yeah, they might as well blame Yang. But this is just another attempt by people with an axe to grind against Trump and his supporters to try and stigmatize them by associating him with this stuff.
Right.
No one's saying that the left needs to take a step back and think about the climate of hatred that it has created, the gaslighting that it has engaged in for 4 years now. It's been more than 4 years since Trump announced his candidacy. It was in, June of 2015?
Right.
Yeah, so it's been more than 4 years that the left has had their gaslighting turned up to 11.
Yeah.
And, of course, there are going to be people like Connor Betts, unstable, marginal people who are going to go crazy.
That guy who tried to shoot the Republican congressman, remember that? That's been memory old.
Yeah, oh, that's right. There's been a lot of left-wing violence. The guy who assaulted Rand Paul.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a lot of left-wing violence. Why? Because the left has been gaslighting itself. And, of course, you're going to get a certain amount of violence. You're also going to just get suicides.
Yeah.
When you gaslight people. When you say that America is falling into fascism and there's no hope. And some of these people feel like, well, there's nothing they can do and they might as well just check out. I bet there were a few dozen or a few hundred cat ladies who off themselves after the midterm elections. We're not going to hear about that. But these people are gaslighting them. You know, the leaders of the left gaslight their followers, whip them up, and then take no responsibility when these people go on killing sprees or kill themselves or behave in other antisocial, irrational ways. They take no responsibility for it. And no one calls them on it because no one in the mainstream media will give a voice to that.
Right.
But they will do the exact same thing to Trump.
Yeah.
And Trump has not created a climate of hate.
No.
No.
Trump has simply articulated fears that more than 60 million Americans agreed with who voted for him. And it turns out that Trump's views are far more moderate than most Trump voters, as we saw with the send her back stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He was like a little taken aback by how enthusiastic people were about that. That's the truth here. The truth is that Trump is not winding the electorate up. Trump is articulating some of the electorate's fears.
He's like a safety valve.
He's like a safety valve.
This is stuff that's been simmering for decades.
Yeah. Yeah.
Last year we ran some articles by Sam Francis from the 90s, and it was amazing to me how prescient he was. I mean, he basically foresaw Trump 20 years before, 25 years before, because he saw all the trends that were developing and the frustration of white working class America and how the Republican Party was completely failing to address any of that mm-hmm. in any genuine way. You know, he liked Buchanan, but, I guess you could say Buchanan was like the prototype for Trump.
Yeah.
But it wasn't his time. It wasn't the time for that kind of populist politics yet, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think on the matter of terrorism, we have to say that, well, what is terrorism? Terrorism is using violence as a method of intimidation to make people change their minds or silencing them, basically.
Right.
And there is no one on our side, there's no white nationalist or alt-right or whatever you want to call it, there's no major representative for our cause that lends legitimacy to whatever some crazy person does. There's no one who supports those violent acts or those shootings or whatever. But at the same time, there's any number of people in the establishment left who publicly say repeatedly that it's okay to punch a Nazi or whatever, to use violence to shut people up, who disagree with them. Mm-hmm. We never do the same. But yet, those establishment leftist figures, political establishment, sort of mainstream people, are never held responsible for that kind of violence.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, the Antifa, the purpose of Antifa is not to you know, voice an opinion about anything. It's to use violence and intimidation to shut other people up, which makes them, by definition, a terrorist group.
Exactly. And they are a terrorist group.
Yeah. And that is the definition, because they don't have, they're not writing, they're not debate, they're not participating in any debate. They're trying to shut other people up using violence. And that's their only purpose. So of course, they are by definition of a terrorist group, and they are given legitimacy by the establishment figures, you know, who say the same things, that it's quite okay to punch a Nazi to shut him up, you know.
Yeah, Antifa doesn't have any arguments. Antifa is simply a form of violent, terroristic threats to shut down political debate, yet they are not declared a terrorist movement and treated as such. Whereas the left is trying to get white nationalists declared as to be a terrorist movement.
They're trying to ban everything we do, although we never support violence. We support presenting our own arguments, and because we know we'll win the debate every single time. 100 out of 100, we'll win the debate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they try and meme us into advocates of an inherently violent ideology. But the point of white nationalism, as I understand it, is precisely as a way of avoiding the violence that is intrinsic to multiculturalism. Yes. Multiculturalism is an inherently violent ideology. If we really want to ban inherently violent ideologies, multiculturalism fits the bill. If we want to ban inherently violent groups, terroristic groups whose sole purpose is to create political change through violence, then Antifa needs to be banned.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is that, I mean, just, you know, when they blame us for inter-ethnic violence and hostility, the sheer stupidity of that proposition is that we have never held power, so we have never been in a position to create this situation at all. We are only observers who point out a problem that needs to be solved. Yeah. They created the situation, because we can't be blamed, you know, logically, because we never held power.
Well, we're so blamed because of our ethnicity, not because of our actions.
They say that we cause hostility. You know, that if only we stop noticing, then the hostilities will disappear. Well, but we only point out hostilities and conflict that already exist.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Well, the liberal idea of, well, not just America, but the West as a whole, is that, you know, before the 1960s, basically the U.S. and the West was de facto white nationalist, Nazi, whatever you want to call it. Then, you know, we had this wonderful liberal enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're the ones who are trying to, you know, we're so afraid of losing that unjust power that we wielded before the 60s, that we're desperately trying to hold on to this white supremacist system. I mean, that's the leftist narrative. So that's how they can hold us responsible, because they think that we're trying to defend this legacy of our civilization, which is, of course, nothing but violence and oppression and sexism and blah, blah, blah. So if you want to look at it from their point of view, I mean, obviously that's completely ridiculous, but that's how they managed to find us complicit. And now, I mean, that's a mainstream view in the Democratic Party. I mean, in the debates now, I think almost all of the candidates were at least open to the idea of reparations for slavery, which even a decade ago, that would have been thought completely bonkers any mainstream politician.
Yeah.
And now it's threatening to become part of the Democrat platform, which is scary.
Definitely.
Well, although not scary in a way, because I want them to go as far off the deep edge as possible, because that way, the deep end, because that way they'll, they'll just alienate themselves further from middle America, and middle America will gravitate more and more towards our suggestions.
Yeah, it's very instructional when these people go completely nuts. I really do feel like America is moving in the direction of civil war for the simple reason that the left is so demonizing people who disagree with them. They basically want to treat them as not human, right? Just Absolutely. Monsters. There's never going to be a return to civility. The left has broken that. And that means that one of the hallmarks of democratic politics, namely the idea that we can have a pluralism of different forces in society that trade power with one another periodically through elections, and it all sort of clusters together around the center, center left, center right, sort of taking turns, controlling the direction of the society. That's not going to happen anymore. The vindictiveness and the insanity, the race hate that comes out of the Democratic Party is convincing very large numbers of white Americans that we simply can't afford, for our own personal safety, to cede power to these people, and it doesn't matter what the elections say. Right. And I really think that we're approaching a point where the legitimacy of democracy is just disappearing in America. And I really do think that we need to push that as a meme. Democracy has been invalidated by mass immigration. The whole point of democracy is to make the elites accountable to the people. They rule at our pleasure, the pleasure of the people. And if they cease to serve our interests, they can be replaced by people who will serve our interests. Mm-hmm. That's the principle of democratic legitimacy. The people rule, the elites rule at the sufferance of the people as their servants. But when elites decide that they want to hold on to power, what do? They figure out ways of negating the public will. So they fix elections. They call off elections. They have the dead vote. They sign up illegal aliens. But the most heinous form of this most heinous form of election tampering, is the idea that no, we the elites are permanent. Mm-hmm. It's the people who are replaceable, the yes. people who are fungible. And there's this famous poem by Bertolt Brecht where he talks about how the government has lost faith in the people and has decided to dissolve the people and elect a new one, right? Instead of the people dissolving the government and electing a new one. That really refers to race replacement, ultimately. They are replacing the people, but that undermines the principle of democratic legitimacy. So mass immigration is election tampering. Race replacement invalidates democracy. Race replacement is a way that the left, largely, has been scheming to create a permanent one-party dictatorship.
Yeah, and one of the most massive types of election tampering is simply deplatforming and keeping dissenting voices out of the debate completely.
Yeah.
Which is what the establishment is doing at the moment, you know. They're deplatforming all white nationalists. You get kicked off from YouTube, from Twitter, which is like the public space where the debate is held right now, is in social media. And when they shut people out from the debate, that's election tampering.
It's election tampering.
Big time.
And it's open. A lot of nationalist populist parties and politicians were deplatformed by YouTube and Facebook.
Yeah.
In the run-up to the European elections recently. Yeah. Blatant election tampering by an American-based corporation. This should not be allowed. You know, the EU should be dispatching special forces to Silicon Valley to take these people out. You know, that would be the behavior of a normal society if a foreign entity were interfering with its political process. They would they would treat them as terrorists, basically, and dispatch special forces. Mark Zuckerberg better be careful. There might be frogmen wading ashore someday at his million-dollar estate in Maui to take him out for election tampering. And God knows what country they'd come from, because it's all of them at this point. Yes. It's all of them. So, yeah, these corporations are a massive problem. And democracy is being invalidated. Now, I believe in the principle of popular sovereignty. That's what populism means. We believe in the principle of popular sovereignty. Democracy is one way of ensuring popular sovereignty, elections and things like that. But we found that when the people can be replaced by the elites, that completely erases it. And that means that at a certain point, as America becomes a banana republic, white Americans are going to look around and say, democracy is a sham. Mm-hmm. We no longer respect it. We no longer can feel safe by abiding by the outcomes of these elections. The peaceful transfer of power will come to an end. American democracy will come to an end. And I believe that that's happening. It'll happen in the next few years. It'll happen. It could happen as soon as 2020 if Trump is not reelected. It could happen in 2024. There is probably going to be a certain latency period, but as soon as the summer of 2021, America could simply be in the throes of a race war. And if that happens, it's entirely the fault of the left. It's entirely the fault of the left. They fired the first shots in the race war. They're the ones who basically tried to disenfranchise white America by opening the floodgates to the third world.
Yes. And as you said in some of your recent tweets, Greg, we shouldn't exactly spare Trump and the Republicans either, because they haven't been taking advantage of the power that they were given in 2016
Trump,
solve the situation either.
Trump has been trotting out all these angel moms, the mothers of people killed by illegal aliens. But he's had 2.5 years to get a handle on the border crisis.
The first 2 years of which they had a majority in both houses.
Yeah.
They still couldn't get anything done.
Well, and the thing is that he could have done a lot of what needed to be done by executive order, and he didn't do it. And there's a point when you have to say that the blood of the innocents is on Trump's hands for not dealing with this problem. Surely in the last 2.5 years, there have been people murdered by illegal aliens who came in under Trump's watch. In fact, deportations are lower under Trump, and the influx is higher under Trump than it was under Obama.
Yes.
That's always the case. There's always, you know, the good cop, bad cop, that one politician or one political party gets criticized for its inhumane attitude towards mass immigration and immigrants. But when you look at the numbers, it's always them who are, you know, importing the most, the largest number of immigrants.
Yeah,
and I mean it's a game, it's a charade, it's a bluff, and like you said, and like I said, you know, that people just have to acknowledge this as election tampering whenever different political points of view are not treated with the same, according to the same rules, basically.
Yeah,
and if we are not able to speak our mind on the same terms as other political points of view, that's election tampering.
Yeah.
I mean, plain and simple.
Exactly. So I do believe that the election tampering, the systematic election tampering through race replacement immigration, is going to blow up. Mm-hmm. The Brexit, Trump, the rise of national populism in Europe, all of these are reactions to race replacement immigration.
Yes.
On one level or another, and globalization more broadly. And the left didn't seem to figure in a reaction to this. It's kind of amazing how many people never played chess, apparently. They just assume that their opponents have no agency, right? They assume that they'll put up with anything, they'll never fight back, and they act surprised and outraged and butthurt and entitled to get their way.
Well, to be honest, though, I mean, for a while they really were. Yeah. You know, I mean, when I first sort of came around to my current worldview was in the 90s. And at that time, I thought we were always going to be on the margins because there really wasn't any political voice in America or even really in Europe that I can think of, although I didn't know as much about what was happening in Europe then as I do now. But it really seemed like the situation was hopeless. And I thought we were destined to just be this sort of underground sect, you know, passing truth, you know, down to others like ourselves. But, you know, while society was sort of collapsing all around us. And it's been quite amazing to see the resistance finally appear just in recent years.
Yeah, I didn't really think it would happen in my lifetime. When I started Countercurrents, I started a website that was very, very different from the website I would have started today if I were starting it all over again. My assumption was is that we are going to be like some sect or be like, you know, Saint Benedict, you know, trying to keep alive ideas through a long, long, dark age. And now it seems like things are changing at a much more rapid pace. Much more rapidly than I expected, definitely. So yeah, I do think there are enormous possibilities here. Enormous possibilities that were not visible 9 years ago when this webzine and publishing house started. So yeah, I do think that finally the sleeping giant is awakening, but I don't think these people have seen anything yet. And I hope that we can avoid the explosion that's coming down the road.
Yes.
I hope that people can be reasoned with. It's kind of a silly thing to hope when you look at history, because most people don't learn from history. Most people don't learn from reason. People learn from experience, and the most instructive experience is suffering. And this is why we've been predicting for decades, for generations now, for more than 50 years, people in our movement, that opening the borders to the third world is going to lead to a point where Americans are robbed of their nation and their future. It might be happening very, very soon. And only then will a lot of people really believe it. Only when they feel like it's actually been done to them, that they've actually lost their nation and their future, will they finally listen to us. And at that point, I think that, well, we can either become like Mexico or we can have another American Revolution. And I think there's going to be another American Revolution. I don't think Americans are going to go gently, white Americans are going to go gently into the night of basically being a hated minority in a society like Mexico, where you've got a non-white majority ruled over by a tiny white elite that basically are oligarchs mouthing leftist platitudes, which is what you have in Mexico.
Yeah, I think that's why they're throwing out more and more distractions for us all the time, in the hope that, like, I have to say, I mean, I tend to be pretty libertarian when it comes to this issue myself, but I wonder, when you see the rapid transformation of marijuana laws in the U.S., I'm surprised that so much of the establishment is now on board with that. And I'm wondering if they see it as, oh, this is another thing to keep people, you know, kind of
pacified,
stupid and satiated.
Oh, yeah.
As everything goes to hell.
They rule us. They rule us through our vices. That's how they stay in control. Definitely. One thing that worries me is the amazing capitulation of Trump and the Republicans towards demands for gun control and speech control in the aftermath of this shooting spree.
Well, I do find it quite amusing that many of the same people who are calling for gun control in the wake of these attacks are the very same people who think that Trump is a Nazi and a dictator.
Yeah, yeah, well, and they want him to take away people's guns. Well, but it's kind of shocking. I understand the left engaging in a power grab. I don't understand the right engaging in basically just throwing away power.
That's what they always do.
Though. Yeah,
because they don't have a real position. They don't believe in anything. Yeah. That's where we, you know, where we come into the picture.
Yeah, they're just throwing away power, and basically this is. These people should know better. Haven't they ever been in an abusive relationship, for instance? You know, the abusive wife says, "You don't love me, you don't love me." And of course it's a lie, right? Just like the left says, "You're a racist, you're a racist." And of course that's a lie because Trump isn't a racist, unfortunately. You're a racist, you're a white supremacist, you're a hater. And instead of just telling them to screw themselves, you liars, you shameless liars and manipulators, they try and placate them. Just like the weary husband, after being softened up by this abusive shrew, "You don't love me, you don't love me," reaches for his checkbook or something to try and placate her. You know, this is what the Republicans do. They are weaklings. They are like abused spouses, basically, being buffeted around, ordered around, manipulated by these hysterical left-wing shrews. And you'd just think that they would catch on to this. Because nobody's made happy by appeasing abusers. You know, they would never put up with this in foreign policy. Well, of course, they do it all the time with Israel. What am I saying? But you know, they're the ones who'd say, "Oh, the policy of appeasement against Hitler was a terrible idea." Yeah, but the policy of appeasement with people within your own borders is far more destructive, right? And appeasing the left just makes everything worse. But they appease them, and that's because they lack any moral convictions of their own. And on a deep level, they lack the conviction that they have the right to be happy, to lead a decent life. It's this white guilt shit has so crept into these people's psychology that they won't stand up for themselves.
Well, the one way in which the Republicans do show some backbone is on the Second Amendment and gun issues. But I suspect that's because it kind of... Well, first of all, they couldn't really turn their backs on that because there's a large amount of their support, I think, comes from that. I mean, the NRA gives substantial donations to Republican candidates. They know a lot of people vote on that issue. I mean, as an NRA member, they send you a card in the mail saying, "This is how you should vote if you care about gun issues." They're very well organized in that respect. I don't think the Republicans want to lose that. And even though I myself am very pro Second Amendment, at the same time, I do recognize that there is a certain type of right wing person in the U.S. who thinks that as long as he's allowed to keep his guns, that everything else is okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Republicans don't want to compromise on that issue, even if they will on everything else. I think this, you know, Trump talking about these red flag legislation. I mean, he hasn't specified precisely what he means by that yet. And most states in the U.S. don't have this, but some do. That basically gives family members, they can report to the police if you've said or done something that they think might indicate that you're planning to commit some sort of violent act like these shooters do. And that then gives the police the right to either detain you or take away your guns or weapons or whatever. You know, I don't think that would help. I mean, according to all the reports I've read, nobody thought any of the three shooters from the last week or so had any indication that they were planning to do this. So it wouldn't have helped in any of those situations. I think that they want to do that because they don't want to pursue, well, the assault weapons ban. Although I should point out, there is no technical classification of weapon as an assault weapon. That's like an invention of the media to sound scary.
Right.
Usually what they mean by that is semi-automatic rifles.
Right. Although, and it's like talking about an assault fork. Yes. I suppose you could use a fork to assault people, but that, there's no special kind of fork that's an assault fork. And the idea that we abandon assault weapons basically is like a sneaky way of inserting the premise that we can ban all of them.
Well, yeah. Also, I mean, some American liberals will say to me, well, you know, I don't have any problem with people having hunting rifles. And it's like, do you really think a rifle that can take down a 500-pound deer can't be used to kill people as well?
Right.
So I think their strategy is that they would like to ban semi-automatic weapons or whatever. They'll wait a bit. There will inevitably be another massacre.
Yeah.
I don't think they can get all the semi-automatic weapons off the streets, but even if they theoretically did, these people wouldn't be deterred by that. They would just use some other
illegal
type of weapon. And they'll say, well, that obviously wasn't enough. We have to, you know, go to the next phase and, you know, ban all firearms.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously
the hunting rifle thing is just a distraction in my view, because frankly, the purpose of the Second Amendment is not to make sure that people have hunting rifles.
Right.
It's to make sure that people have weapons for killing other people. That's what a militia is all about. It's killing people. And the purpose of this is to make sure that the armed populace has the ability to kill soldiers, either of invading armies or of a lawless central government. If that has to take place.
Or even just criminals, so that you... I mean, at least the idea of it originally was that you wouldn't have to then be dependent on law enforcement to protect yourself.
Right, exactly.
There were parts of the U.S. that were far beyond where there was any police presence. But, of course, I think that's still just as true today, because if you call the police, if there's a situation, the chances that they will get there in time to resolve it is very small. You're going to have to take care of that yourself. That's why people are armed.
Yeah. There's some meme. It's probably an NRA thing. When seconds count, the police are minutes away.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. The existence of things like SWAT teams is very interesting. You know, in the past, the police would have a six-shooter, revolver, and then they moved up to guns with bigger clips, you know. Why? Well, because criminals escalated with their weapons. And now there are criminals with automatic weapons, and so the police have automatic weapons. And the fact is that if the purpose of the Second Amendment is to give citizens the power to kill lawless people, then the Second Amendment should allow people to have automatic weapons. Because that's the only way that you can deal with invading soldiers or a military coup on the part of some rogue element in your own society, or, you know, gangbangers and people like that who do have automatic weapons.
Yes.
So, frankly, the Second Amendment, I would think, should include automatic weapons. There should be no question about having automatic weapons. The only thing I would sort of draw back from is, okay, artillery.
Well, there's no practical reason for private citizens to have artillery. Or tanks or fighter aircraft.
Or nuclear bombs, you know, things like that. But definitely. I think automatic weapons should be something that citizens can have if we understand the purpose of the Second Amendment, which is really as a bulwark against tyranny.
Yes.
It's the thing that ensures the First Amendment and all the other amendments, ultimately. And if you look at the history of Republican thinking, you go back to Aristotle's Politics. Aristotle points out that the freest societies in ancient Greece are the ones where the most citizens have arms.
Well, when I visited Iceland last year, I remember it said that in ancient times, in Viking times, if a man was not armed, that was like a criminal offense. A man was supposed to be armed at all times, even if he wasn't expecting to go into combat, because you don't know what might happen.
Yeah, that's how to be.
That's the European tradition.
Yeah, definitely. So all of this is very troubling, but I do feel that, how to put it, it's only a crisis if we don't turn it into an opportunity. And so we just have to jump on these things and capitalize them. It's not like the left isn't capitalizing on these things. The left is always trying to milk political advantage out of tragedies. And when they do that, we have to do that right back and use this as an opportunity to red pill people. So they want to shut us down, and we will use their attempts to shut us down to open more minds.
Yes.
That's just how we do it. We have to take full advantage of these things. And ultimately, I think that if we fight hard enough, we're going to be able to turn every one of these crises into an opportunity. And that's how we win.
Well, I really thought that the Shooter's Manifesto, I thought it added to the tragedy of what he did, because it seemed like he has a pretty good grasp of what's going on. You know, it wasn't saying about, oh, I hate wetbacks or anything like that. He had a very reasoned understanding of the fact that, you know, we're being replaced ethnically in the United States, white Americans, and that corporations are playing a role in this.
Because Republicans are playing a role in this.
Yeah, I mean, he actually betrayed, I mean, there was nothing original in it, but he clearly had a very good understanding of what's going on. So why he thought that that was the best way to deal with it, well, that probably relates to his mental state.
Yeah, there is that disconnection, that leap in logic. And we just have to fight that. We have to get the word out to our own people and people who are listening to us that this isn't the way forward. This actually sets us back. This is why as soon as these things happen, I pull out my old template and plug in the new bits of data and slap it on the front page. Because it gets traffic. And I just hope that eventually, if I keep republishing these articles, that it'll stop. It's the only thing I can do that's in my power to do as an individual, is just try and persuade people against this. So I pulled out my template and did the Understanding the El Paso Walmart Massacre piece. And then I also republished the piece that's based on a talk I gave at the Scanza Forum, namely against white nationalist terrorism. And those have gotten a respectable lot of traffic. And then I also put out a press release, which was a new sort of experiment on my part. It's very, very funny. The press will contact you and they'll want information from you. But if you simply type all the information up and put it out for the whole world so they can't selectively quote it and distort it or make it into an exclusive, then suddenly they completely lose interest in it.
Yes. That's...
If you keep them honest, they're not interested because they're not in an honest profession, basically. So.
Well, that's why if these people do contact you and want to interview you, you should always make your own recording of the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
So that they can't just select random bits.
Yeah, the only time The only time I didn't do that was simply because my Skype recorder somehow failed to activate. That was the interview I did with this Thomas Mann fellow who wrote that book, The Rise of the Alt-Right. I thought I gave a great interview, and I was really, really ticked off at him that he would not share his copy of the tape with me. But it turns out the guy was just a major creep. When the book actually came out. In fact, I asked Jared Taylor, I said, Jared, have you seen this new book? You were interviewed for it. And he sort of searched his mind and he said, oh, yes, that creep. And yeah, the guy was a creep. But anyway, I generally have made a point of making a recording of it, or if it's just something that I type up, I'll immediately put the entire thing out at the Countercurrents site for all the world to see. I don't think that's hypocritical because I don't believe in talking to journalists. I think people are dumb to talk to journalists. But if there's something that I want to say, I'm going to say it. And it doesn't matter if a journalist asks me, obviously. I'm going to say it. And if I want to say it, I'll just publish it on the website.
Yes.
So, you know, and journalists can make of it what they will, like they can make of everything that I publish what they will. They're free to quote everything I put out at Countercurrents. Everything I put out at Countercurrents is something I want to say. And if I wanted to say it because a journalist asked me, well, I'm not going to not say something because a journalist was the one who posed the question. So I put out my interview about Andrew Yang, for instance. The person who contacted me about that never quoted the interview, never used it, but the interview has been read 4,000, 5,000 times on my own site. We have our own media, so we don't need those people. But it's still, occasionally, it's interesting as an experiment to see what they do. You know, but generally, if you do it in a way that they're forced to be honest, they're not interested
anymore. Right. In 9 out of 10 cases, they don't even want to talk to you then.
Yeah. Well, we've been going at it for an hour, and I think we've said a lot of things of substance, and I think our listeners will be satisfied. So let's leave it at that, and we'll resume next week.
Thing?
Sure.
Yeah. So we have we've been talking a bit about democracy, about voter fraud and so on. And we're having a conference coming up about national populism, which is basically, you know, people reacting against what the elites are forcing upon them, namely mass immigration. And people are reacting against that. And that's why we have things that like the Trump election, like Brexit, that surprised the mass media, the establishment mass media and the establishment politicians, took them by surprise. But, I mean, it represents a reaction in the people. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that, national populism and what it means.
What are the dates and what is the location and how do people sign up?
So, it's in Copenhagen, October 12th. Speakers are Rasmus Paludan, who is a Danish politician. He's a legal defense attorney who became a politician, and he has a very popular YouTube channel where he sort of does these a bit spectacular things. He's a bit of a showman. He's a very interesting character, very well known in Denmark. Greg is speaking. I am speaking. Millennial Woes is speaking. And Mark Collett is speaking as well.
Excellent.
So it's going to be October 12th in Copenhagen, Denmark, and it's going to be about national populism. And you can sign up by sending me an email at info@scanzaforum.com. And I think we'll just put a link to an article about that event in the show notes for this episode as well.
Great. Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely do that. So thanks, Frody. Thanks, John. I think this has been a good time. And we should do an entire episode where we just talk about the Scanza Forum.
Sure.
The upcoming events, because there's not only one coming up in Copenhagen, but another one later in Oslo.
Yes.
And we need to get people excited about that and on.
Exactly. Yeah. We haven't really announced that, but it's like breaking news now. So we're going to have one more event on the 2nd of November in Oslo, Norway. And that's going to be about human biodiversity, basically the nature versus nurture debate. And it's going to be a bit more of an academic conference because everyone is an academic, you know, PhD or professor. I'll speak as always. You're going to speak, Greg. And we're going to have Kevin McDonald, who is, of course, a psychology professor. And we're going to have Helmut Nyborg, who is an emeritus professor of psychology as well. And Edward Dutton, who is also a PhD.
Yeah.
And that's in Oslo on the 2nd of November. So we have two big Scanza forums coming up in
Great.
Just the coming months now.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. And we will definitely do an entire show where we just talk about the Scanza Forum, just to get people on board. Scanza Forum is one of the most important metapolitical projects in Europe now, and I urge everybody to support it. If you can't actually attend, get in touch with Frody and help make sure that it has enough funds, right? Donate to it if you can't actually attend, because these things can get expensive. Sometimes they don't break even. Sometimes you're fighting against deplatforming. Places will pull out and you're scrambling to get a new venue and so forth. I've seen this happen with the Scanza Forum, and I've been very, very impressed with how they have bounced back from all of these things. So they're definitely an organization and initiative that's worth supporting. So yeah, we'll do an entire episode on this in the future. So that's a lot to look forward to for you out there in radio land. More on the Scanza Forum coming up in the future and the Scanza Forums itself. So join us again for the next episode of Countercurrents Radio.